For quite a number of weeks, we've been looking at what's called parables of the kingdom, and quite often Jesus would begin by saying the kingdom of heaven is like, and then he'd go on to tell a parable, trying to explain to us what the kingdom on earth would look like, as well as a little bit to do with the kingdom of heaven, what is yet to come. And so here we are in Matthew chapter 25 with another one of those beginning statements. This is a little bit different than many of the other parables Jesus told, because many times Jesus told parables to a large number of people. Then at times the explanation of the parable in Matthew 13, for instance, that we have explanations to some of those parables would be given to the disciples by themselves, because they would come to Jesus afterwards and say, "We don't understand what you're talking about. Please explain." And so he would tell them what he meant by the parable. But this parable here in Matthew 25 is actually just told to the disciples. What had happened at this point, this is really near the end of Jesus' life. He'd already been to Jerusalem and upset a sufficient amount of people, and a lot of enemies were made, and people were not happy with things that Jesus had to say. And so in a short while, obviously if you're familiar with Matthew, it only goes to chapter 28. By the time you get to chapter 27, they're putting him to death, and so here we are, chapter 25. So the end is near. And so he's giving his disciples some information about what is going to come. And again, as you're reading through the Bible in the New Testament, like after Jesus rose from the dead, the book of Acts not so much, but maybe some of the other letters, we kind of get the impression that even the apostles thought Jesus is coming soon. Like when they mean soon, they mean, you know, this week, this month, maybe sometime this year. And so they had this expectation that it's going to be any minute now. And, you know, that does something to you, I guess. It really gets you on edge. It keeps you prepared. It keeps you working hard because, you know, you don't have a whole lot of time left. Now, if I said to you, you know, we know for sure Jesus is not coming for another 50 years, you may not be going at 100% for the next 50, because that's a lot, you know. I mean, at some point you're going to get tired. But if I said Jesus is coming in 35 minutes, I think maybe we'd say, hey, there's some left unleft business I need to take care of. You know, maybe it's going to a brother or a sister, or going to talk to a friend or a relative. I don't know what it would be, but we'd feel like, hey, you know, if it's that soon, we better make sure everything is in order. And maybe even personally, we would think, well, I need to really focus on my relationship with the Lord because he's coming very soon. So Jesus is saying it's going to be a little bit of a while. And so he's trying to help people get that into their minds. And of course, now we look at it and say, wow, 2,000 years is quite a while. That's how long, you know, the world has been waiting for the return of the groom, the bridegroom. And that's the picture here of a wedding ceremony. And so if we get the context here a little bit, Matthew chapter 24, Jesus left the temple, was walking away, and the disciples came and said to called his attention to the building. They had a little discussion about the building and the destruction of Jerusalem and things like that. Verse 3, as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately and they said, when are these things going to happen? Jesus went into a long discussion about destruction of Jerusalem as well as his second coming, this return even that we're waiting for now. And then he goes and tells some parables there, even in Matthew chapter 24, about his return, that it will come at a time when we don't expect it. We're not really sure when it's going to happen. A lot of times people like to set dates or even to set times. The strange things, you know, even reading through it, you think, well, it seems like Jesus is saying, well, you should be able to have a general idea, kind of. There'll be what people call the signs of the times, right? There'll be wars and rumors of war, and there'll be conflict, and there'll be people that call themselves the Messiah, false teachers, false Christ. When all that comes together, you're getting near to the end. But I mean, people have been doing this for over 100 years now, saying, oh, we can tell it's coming soon because of the signs of the time. And I would imagine this is, you know, only in the last 100 years, but I think it's probably been going on probably for at least 1,000 years. People would say, look, I mean, we got a war going on here. We got a famine here. There's a earthquake over there. There's a volcano erupting. You know, people are false teachers, and, you know, so he's coming soon. But even, you know, even in our most recent days, we've had several people, and they actually come up with a date, very specific. And I don't know, are you disappointed we're still here? I mean, some people are like, oh, it's kind of hoping to go, right? Kind of getting geared up for it. But yeah, we're still here. So I don't even know how well we could, you know, be able to say, all the pieces are together. And, you know, it's going to be soon. We don't know when, but soon. And so I don't know if it really makes that much of a difference if it's soon or not. Because what difference would that make in our life? Like and that's the parable. This is what he's trying to say. We just need to be ready because we don't know when it's going to be. And whether Jesus does not come for another 1,000 years beyond today, we don't know when we are going to personally meet the Lord. It could be tonight. It could be, you know, pretty quick. So we don't know. And so he is saying, ultimately, I don't want to give the punchline away from the parable, but he's saying, just be ready. Be prepared. It could happen at any time. So that's kind of where this picture goes. So I don't know if we've ever done a parable or a lesson before on a wedding feast. The royal family over in... Okay, I know I did. It was 2 weeks ago. Hopefully some people are like, now that sounds vaguely familiar. Yeah, but 2 weeks ago, we did a parable on the wedding invitation. And the invitations were given out to a lot of people. And it seemed like there was a lot of people said, yeah, we're coming. We want to be there. RSVP, you know, check the box. Yes. And yet when the wedding was actually getting ready to take place, and then the king sent out kind of the second round of invitations to say, it's all ready. We sing the song, all things are ready. Come to the feast. You know, come on in. And the people say, oh, no, I got other things going on. I'm too busy. I got this. I know I said yes, but, you know, change of mind, change of priorities. You know, that was that parable. But now we've also now got another wedding parable. And so it's kind of interesting. We're going to find out maybe as this unfolds what is happening. And since their wedding traditions and their wedding ceremonies and kind of the way they did the whole thing was a little different than we do it, it's a little harder for us to understand. But anyway, at some point here in this wedding, I would think a lot of historians and commentators believe that it's similar today. The wedding part has already taken place. The vows had already been given and received. And now maybe they were already now at the groom's house, or maybe they're on their way to the groom's house, or maybe they're on their way to the bride's house. But in any case, there are some, and we would call them bridesmaids, really, is the best we could do to call them this. These are the women that are there to support the bride and maybe even to support the groom. But, they're there and going to enjoy the celebration. And since it's happening at night, and maybe they didn't know exactly when it was going to happen, but it was going to happen at night in this case. And so they needed to be ready. And one of the things they could do is provide the light. You know, so today, maybe not so important because, you know, we got nice lights that we can turn everything on. But back then, they had these women that would maybe be able to help everybody get into the building. And then once they're in the building, at least provide some light with these lamps that they had. Maybe at some point they were going to be even involved in some of the procession that would be going out even in the streets. So here it mentions 10 virgins. Again, I don't know if there's anything to do with the number. So if you're into numerology, you know, we know that 10 is kind of considered a perfect number. This is just maybe a picture of everybody, kind of everybody in the kingdom. Now, it seems like these people are in the kingdom. They are a part of the church. They are in the church, or at least among the church on the earth. Because these women have accepted the invitation to be at the wedding, and they've even accepted the responsibility to be, again, let's just call them bridesmaids, right? If you ask somebody to be in your wedding as a bridesmaid, I think they understand that they have some responsibility, right? You know, they've got to be prepared. They probably have to buy their own dress. They have to, you know, come maybe help you set up if you're going to be having a lot of decoration in the hall or then in the fellowship hall. And so they've got some responsibilities to do. They've got to come early, and we've got to go through the rehearsal. So there's things that they have to do. They've accepted the invitation. It seems like they're friends, certainly friends of the woman that's getting married, the bride. Maybe they're even friends of the groom. And so here they are, accepted the invitation, and they're all looking pretty good. I mean, they're all dressed. They all have their lamps. They're all eager. They're waiting. I mean, they're patient. Nobody's left and said, we're just going to go home. We're tired of waiting for this couple to show up. But they took their lamps and they went to meet the bridegroom. Now, if we're talking about the kingdom, this is the part that gets really difficult. I don't like it when things get difficult. I like it when things are easy. This is the difficult part. Five of them were foolish and five of them were wise. I don't like the numbers. I don't think Jesus is talking about, let's just split it 50-50. But wouldn't you have been a lot more happier if Jesus said, you know, nine were wise? I mean, look at us. We're wise. I understand there could be a small, like 10% of us. Not so wise. As a matter of fact, not maybe not so wise or foolish. But half? Really? Half? I mean, and again, I don't think Jesus is going to say, you know, who's sitting on what side? I mean, how are we weighing out here? You know, and I don't think he's necessarily saying half, but he's saying, isn't that a significant number? I mean, we all think we're in, each one of us. I mean, even our Sunday morning crowd, if we polled everybody, like raise their hands, who thinks they're going to heaven? If you've been a baptized believer, been around for a long time, now maybe there's a visitor or two that says, well, I don't know if I'm going. Well, that's even not who he's addressing here. He's talking to people that are saying, yeah, I'm going. I'm in the wedding party. I am dressed. I've got my lamp. I'm ready to go. Half. What is more bothersome is that Jesus uses this kind of ratio way too often for my comfort level. What about you? I mean, even the chapter before about people being ready, people that are going to be going to heaven. In Matthew chapter 24, in verse 40, two men will be in the field, one will be taken, and one will be left. What's that? Half. Verse 41, two women will be grinding at the handmill, one will be taken, and one will be left. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 22, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name? And in your name do many mighty works and cast out demons? Many, many will say that. And who are they? They're not the people saying, yeah, Lord, I didn't really believe you. I'm an atheist, you know, or I rejected you. There's no doubt I deserve to go to hell. No, these are, Lord, I thought I was in. I accepted the invitation. And Jesus is going to say, depart from me. I never knew you. And they will be thrown into the outer darkness. Many. I mean, he could have said a few and made me feel better. But many. That's quite something. Well, what's the problem then? Why so many? Like half, why? Why this number? Well, it says five of them were foolish. Foolish. The Greek word is moros, and it's where we get the English word moron. So we don't have to call them foolish or stupid or ignorant. We'll just call them morons. Does that make you feel any better? Not really. But it just says that they were lacking sense. I mean, they really should have known better, shouldn't they? I'm guessing they've been to a wedding before. They should have been prepared. But all these externals, we're going to find out, and maybe kind of as we're at the beginning here, it's hard sometimes interpreting parables because I know some people say, we don't like you, well, like a Bible scholar would say to me, don't pick apart everything in the parable. But here is something to consider in the parable. They were all asked to be a part of the wedding feast. They were all prepared for the wedding feast. And I don't know what society was like back then, but they're all moral. I mean, you kind of hate to say this, but it's harder and harder to find virgin girls anymore. And virgin boys. I'm not picking on the girls or only. I mean, obviously, it takes the boy to, you know, ruin the girl, her virginity. But their morality They're good deeds. They're, well, you know, I've tried to keep myself pure for the Lord. Well, that alone apparently doesn't get anybody into heaven. Just being a good person. I mean, is that what people say today? Well, you know, I'm not a Christian, but I'm a good person. I'm not going to follow what the Bible says, but you know, I think I'm better than a lot of Christians in my morality, in my living, in my giving, in the way I treat people. Kind of a better person. Apparently, people are not getting to heaven based on their morality, their moral status. But we find out what the problem then becomes. The foolish ones took lamps, but they did not take any oil with them. The wise ones, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. So the challenge for us is to know even what kind of lamps these were. So in the Bible, there's Greek words for lamps. Some are kind of what we picture here, maybe, or what you may have at home. You may have an oil lamp. You put oil on the bottom. It's got a wick. Maybe have a little glass around it. That kind of a lamp. But apparently, these are not exactly those kinds of lamps. I just thought it was a cute picture, so that's kind of why I included that. But it's going to throw you off. Perhaps these lamps are more like what we would call a torch. So it would be some kind of a stick with material at the end that's wrapped up, and you pour oil. You just have to get oil on it, because that's what's going to burn, the oil. So you put some material on it, soak that in oil, light it, and the oil burns, and it becomes like a big candle. So the idea is that some of these women brought their lamps or their torches, and the torches may even have had some residue oil from the last time they lit it and then put it out. So they could get it going a little bit, but they didn't really bring anything to soak the torch in so that they could actually relight it and let it burn maybe for half an hour or an hour, and then you kind of have to re-soak it again. Because that's kind of important, isn't it? Isn't it important if we've got something that needs fuel that we make sure we have enough fuel? All right, anybody with me on that? Has anybody here ever ridden in an automobile? Have you ever been in an automobile that's run out of gas? Or maybe some kind of a recreational vehicle, a motorcycle or an ATV or a motorboat. It's not very fun to run out of gas. And I guess maybe years ago, there was maybe even a little better excuse. Maybe you just weren't paying attention. But, I mean, unless your gas gauge doesn't work, along with the light and the beeping, and the actual thing that says you've got 23.5 miles left before you're out, is there a whole lot of excuse that people can offer? It's hard to say, well, I didn't know I was running out of gas. I was wondering what all the lights, the flashing lights and the chimes and the, you know, somebody came on my, you know, the OnStar and said, get gas! I don't know if they do that. I don't have OnStar, but anyway. What excuses do you offer to run out of gas? And because when you run out of gas, it's a problem, isn't it? In the middle of the road. You know, you got to get out and start pushing. And then you have to walk to a gas station. And I'm guessing if you've run out of gas, you don't have an extra gas can in the trunk. Now you got to buy a gas can, fill it with gas. And maybe if you're that type of person, you need to bring your money with you. I mean, just it goes on and on. But people do it all the time, run out of gas. Well, that's the position these women were in. We've come to the party with the right implement, with the torch. It didn't bring any fuel. So it's not going to work. I don't know why they didn't. Maybe they thought he's not going to come at night. Maybe he's going to come during the day. We won't even need it. Maybe they were just negligent. Maybe they thought, as soon as he shows up, we can run to the store and buy some. You know, we'll hear ahead of time. We'll have some advance notice. We'll probably have half an hour. Somebody will say, he's on his way. I'll be here soon. Oh, yeah, I've got plenty of time now. Run. And if worse comes to worse, I can borrow some from somebody else. Doesn't it say why they weren't prepared? They just weren't prepared. I guess we've got to fill in our own excuse. So you put your excuse in to say, I'm not going to be prepared when Jesus comes because we can put our own excuse in. So they didn't bring any. So now they're not going to be able to do the job. Maybe it was the only one job that they had to do was to provide light for this wedding reception. So the idea of light, you know, some people say, oh yeah, sure they had oil lamps back then. And I'm like, yeah, sure they did, right? Because this is back in Exodus. This is just after the people left Egypt. Here, what are they talking about? Having candles with oil-burning wicks, and they used olive oil to burn the candles. So Exodus chapter 27, verse 10. It seems like whatever class we're in, it always comes back to Tuesday morning, we're going through the book of Exodus. And we are. But, you know, it always seems to tie in. But this is right about where we're at in Exodus on Tuesdays. Command the Israelites to bring you clear oil pressed of olives for the light so that the lamps may be kept burning. So that's what it was. It was some kind of a wick, oil in it. And so it was the oil that would be drawn up the wick and they'd light it and it would continue to burn. Just other things about this. Exodus 27, verse 21. In the tent of meeting outside the curtain that shields the Ark of the Covenant law, Aaron and his sons are to keep the lamps burning before the Lord from evening until morning. So they're not going to burn all night. It's a symbol. See, it's important now, maybe. A symbol of God's presence to have oil. So maybe as Jesus was telling this, the people were thinking, yeah, in the Old Testament, the oil's important. You don't want to come with a light. You got to have oil because you got to let it burn because it's God with us. And we want God to be with us. We want to remember this relationship that we have with him. So all night, this is burning. Exodus 30, verse 7. Aaron must burn fragrant incense on the altar every morning when he tends the lamps. He must burn incense again when he lights the lamps at twilight. So incense will burn regularly before the Lord for generations to come. And so I'm guessing even in Jesus' day, the disciples knew this. This is one of the things that the priests did every night. They'd get the candles going again. They'd light up the oil. And in the morning, they'd put it out. So oil is so important. The people provided the oil so that this could be in the temple. At this point, it was the tabernacle, but eventually even in the built temple that Solomon and then later on, Ezra and Nehemiah had built. Leviticus 24, verse 2, command the Israelites to bring you clear oil of pressed olives for the light so that the lamps may be kept burning continually. All right, so this is important for the people. Oil in the lamp. So there's maybe even a spiritual connection, even in this parable with the 10 virgins, 10 bridesmaids who were to come with oil in their lamp. So this is what happens next then. The bridegroom was a long time in coming. And that's where we're expecting the second coming of Jesus. We're saying, yes, long time. We don't know when he's coming back, but we know it's been a long time. And so what happens? Sometimes people get sleepy. And again, we've talked about that before. Sometimes when people get sleepy, it's midnight. Nobody's going to blame them. Oh, why are they sleeping? Well, because they're tired. They had a hard day. I mean, maybe they were working for the master all day long, working for the Lord. So there's nothing sinful about them being tired. I mean, we all get tired. Now, we don't give up on our work, but we all sleep sometime. Even Jesus slept. So there's nothing sinful about sleeping. I don't think there's any condemnation in this. But it was a fact that it was completely unexpected. So could you imagine being asleep and all of a sudden says, he's here! And you kind of wake up and go, what? They're still yelling, he's here. And you're like, what? Have you ever done that before? You wake up and it's like, where am I? What's going on? Like I'm sleeping on somebody's sidewalk outside their door. Oh yeah, I know why I'm here. Right? That was just a bad dream. Now I'm awake. The wedding. I'm here. I'm ready. Got my lamp. And so all 10 of the bridesmaids get their lamps out. And they begin starting to try to light them. Now, obviously, there are some of the women that can light the lamps. They burn. Everything seems to be going well. But the ones that did not bring oil, the foolish ones, they realized they couldn't get their lamps going. And maybe they got it started a little bit and then it died out. They tried again, started up. And you could imagine, even back then, starting up a lamp, I don't know. It's got to be a little more difficult than it is today. You think they just pulled out one of those matchbox, like, you know, the long ones. They wouldn't have used the short ones. No. The lighter, yeah. Propane torch with the automatic start, igniter. That'd be cool. Not back then. Just trying to get it lit may have been a little difficult. Generally, it's rubbing wood together or maybe hitting stones and flint together to create a spark that's going to ignite something that's easily combustible. So, lots of oil, it'd be like, you know, a little spark, lots of gasoline, poof, you get some fire. But once you've run out of fuel, it's hard to get anything started, any light going. So these ladies realized, he's like here. We didn't get the, he's coming in 3 days, he's coming in half an hour. They're unprepared. We didn't know he was coming this soon. If we had known, we could have been prepared. We could have been ready. Well, your job is to be ready. That's why you were there outside the door, waiting for him to show up. So they say, give us some of your lamps because our lamps are going out. So this is what the wise women said. We can't give you our oil. We can't give it to you. There's not enough. If we give it to you, we won't have enough for ourselves. Ultimately, what this is saying, because this is a picture of salvation, that I can be saved by God's grace, but God does not give me enough grace that I can go to my unsaved friend or relative or even my marriage partner, my children. I can't say, listen, I've got salvation. I've got some extra I can give to you. And you can come in to this celebration, the wedding of Jesus to the church. You can be in on it because I've got more than enough salvation. You can come in with me. That's not the way people are going to heaven. It's going to be based on their relationship with God. So that's kind of where this breaks down. They're saying, we can't give you salvation. Salvation is not ours to give. That comes from the Lord. So they said, you go out and you have to go find it yourself. Go to the store and get some. But the problem is, this is midnight. The stores are closed. There's no time left now for people to say, I'm unprepared for Jesus. I can get prepared now. That's like people when they die. When they die, and sometimes there's religions that teach us that the people left on earth can somehow give something to the church or say a prayer or to light a light. So they can go to heaven? That's not the way people go to heaven. I can't buy a way, a ticket, an opportunity. I can't buy salvation for anybody. If they have not taken salvation for themselves in this life, it's too late. It's at midnight. There's no opportunity. This is what you do during the day. This is why Jesus says, work while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. So now is the time for salvation. Now is the time that we would respond. So while these women were on their way out looking for oil, trying to buy oil, it doesn't ever say that they found oil. It just says eventually they came back. But they went out to look for oil, to buy oil. The bridegroom arrives. The virgins who were ready, these are the five that had their lamps lit, extra oil. They went in with him to the wedding banquet. The door was shut. When the door is shut, it's complete. It's final. The door's not going to be open again. And so what happens is these women are out looking for oil. Now eventually they're going to come back. Later these five foolish ones came back. Interesting words. Lord, Lord, they said, open the door for us. But he replied, truly I tell you, I don't know you. Which, I mean, that's almost the same scenario that we talked about at the beginning in Matthew 7. Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name cast out demons, in your name do many mighty miracles? And the Lord will say, away from me. I do not know you. Same thing. People are unprepared. Now the door is shut. I mean, we've been talking Sunday mornings, even in the book of Revelation. But Jesus says, if you hear my voice, I'm outside. I'm knocking on the door. You open the door and I will come in. But there's going to come a time where you may be knocking on the door of heaven. And the door is going to be shut. It's going to be at the judgment day. It's too late to say, oh, I want to accept Christ. I want grace. I will turn to the Lord. I believe in Jesus. That's going to be too late. Do you realize at the judgment day, everyone is going to believe in Jesus? Everyone. Every atheist who's ever lived. Every scientist who's ever lived. Every philosopher who's ever lived. Every Buddhist or Muslim or Hindu. They're all going to believe in Jesus. They're all going to believe Jesus is the only Savior. He's the only way. He's the way into heaven. They're all going to believe it. But they're not all going to go to hell. James says, even the demons believe. And they don't just believe. They tremble. They are afraid. They're fearful. They have awe and respect for the Lord. Even the demons believe and tremble. So there's an opportunity, even now. And this is what Jesus says. This is what the parable is about. Therefore, keep watch. Therefore, be ready. Be diligent. Be aware. Keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. And I think there's a lot of people, and maybe even non-Christians today, that say, but we've got plenty of time. I mean, I'm just young. Right? I'm healthy. I'm busy. I've got things to do. I can put that off for another day. I can put that off for another decade. I can put that off for another season of my life. And it's interesting, because sometimes you even meet people in their 80s. And they're still saying, plenty of time. Plenty of time to turn to the Lord. But one day, the time's going to be up when the bridegroom comes. I was looking at that song. It's in our hymn book. We'll sing it one day, but I know we've not sung it in a long time because we don't even have it on PowerPoint, but, you know, about when the bridegroom comes, will we be waiting and watching for the Lord to come? That's what Jesus is saying. We've got to be ready. So don't give up. And don't say, well, it's been 2,000 years. Surely he's not coming anytime soon. And Jesus says over and over again, that's what they said in the days of Noah. They said, plenty of time, not a big deal. It's never going to happen. What do you mean, a flood? But you remember when it started to rain? And then the waters got deep? And what were the people doing? They're lost. They're on the wrong side of the door. And they're pounding on the door of the ark, saying, let us in. Noah said, the door shut. You remember who shut the door to the ark? It was God. Noah didn't pull that thing closed. God said, the door is shut. Judgment's happening. The day of salvation is over. Are you in? Are you on the ark? Are you going to be saved? So this is the day for us to take seriously the message of Jesus, to say, how am I going to live? What do I want? for other people? Is there any urgency in my life to share the gospel with people that are lost? But don't worry. You don't have to do it today or tomorrow. You don't have to share the message with them yet, because we have plenty of time. He's not coming. Not now. Or maybe he is. Something to think about. Again, something I don't think about very often. Need to think about more often, right? Some urgency. Because sometimes we can get just caught up in the day-to-day routine of life. Days come and go, weeks, months, years. Time flies when you're having fun. But are we ready? Let's stand. We'll sing the song. Let us know tonight how we can be a blessing to you.